Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and today we begin the show by covering all things Wisconsin with the authors of a new book, a great new book. It's called The Geography of Wisconsin. We're joined by John Cross. He is an emeritus professor of geography at UW Oshkosh. He wrote the text and took many of the photos in the book. John's published widely on the subject of Wisconsin geography. It is the recipient of a National Science Foundation grant. John, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Great to have you along. Also with us today, Casey Zaneski. Casey is an emeritus professor of geography at UW Oshkosh. He's responsible for the thematic maps, wonderful maps throughout the book. He's also the co-author of several books on European and Wisconsin geography. And Casey, good to have you with us as well.
Good morning. Nice to be here, too.
So as we talk with these two experts, I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know about our state? Maybe it's future in agriculture, or maybe you have questions about the state's physical formations. These guys know it all, I've come to believe after going through their book. You can give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email. The email address, ideas at WPR.org, ideas at WPR.org. You know, I've lived in Wisconsin pretty much my whole life, and feel like I know a lot about the state. But when I opened up your book, I thought, oh, I'm just going to open it up to any page. I opened it up to a page. I looked down. I think it was, I forget the page. It was early in the book. And I learned right off the bat that soil scientists have identified over 800 different soil types in the state. And so that was a surprise to me. I didn't think there were that many. This is one of the many surprises I got when I looked through the book. And maybe we should start by just talking about the topics of geography of Wisconsin and how they're arranged. I don't know. John, do you want to start with that?
Well, the book arranges the topics in a manner that more or less builds upon telling a story. The first chapter simply sets the basics of where the state is, how the state relates to the overall overall location within the continent, the general characteristics of the state, and then we move on to discussing physical features, the geology of the landforms, the soils, the climate that we find throughout the state, and of course all of those things work together to determine the patterns of vegetation that we see. And once we have the physical setting discussed, we move on to the settlement of the state. Now, of course, the Native Americans were here first, and the arrival of the French was involved with fur trading, and then we have miners that come into portions of the state, and then we have settlement relating to forest cutting. We have settlement, which is the most widespread settlement, relating to farming, and using that 800 and some different soil orders that you talked about, soil groups that you talked about earlier. And agriculture is obviously a very, very important part of Wisconsin. And in fact, one of the things that the book is trying to explain to the reader is, and to what do you see as you cut across the state? And agriculture is by far the most conspicuous feature that we see. In some parts of the state, we obviously see forests, but agriculture, particularly within the southern two-thirds of the state, accounts for the vast majority of the land use, and agriculture is a very important part of the state's economy, so it features very prominently. Agriculture was involved for many of the early settlements, and agriculture today, whether this is growing crops for catch crops or growing crops to feed our very large livestock herds, primarily dairy cows, but we have other livestock. And individuals who are producing products obviously need to sell them. and they need to transport them, which brings us into discussing the state's transportation networks. It brings us up to the discussion of the settlement of various urban areas where various services needed by farmers and so forth are discussed. And eventually, at the end of the textbook, we have a chapter that looks at recreation and tourism throughout the state. And of course, that's a very important economic activity.
Yeah, it was. It's. I was trying to. I was thinking about who's the audience for this. Right away, I've anybody who's moving to Wisconsin, I would. If you know, it turned out to be a friend or something, I'd buy them a copy of the book and. to read it. And we do for new professors at UW-Madison, we send them around the state to for a week to sort of see what the state is like. And I think they should all get a copy of the book as well. But I mean, who did you see as the book's audience?
Well, the book was initially created using materials that I had gathered when I taught a Geography of Wisconsin course. And as I taught the course, I realized that there was really no good single geography to which to refer my students. And so as I gathered materials, I came to the conclusion that these materials should be put forth in a book form so that the findings that I had could be shared with a much larger audience besides students. I agree with you. I would think this book could be used very widely by folks who are trying to recruit, particularly recruiting professionals to come to the state. I would think the Chamber of Commerce could find a book like this very useful. There's a huge amount of information that we tried to provide the readers, whether we provided this in text form, through the photographs, or through the very large number of maps that we provided.
And, you know, those maps are outstanding. They are really well put together. I'm telling you, give you such a clear picture of what's going on, depending on the you know, whatever is being discussed at the moment. Casey, give us you were responsible, I think, for those maps. Give us an insight into that preparation process. That had to be huge.
Yes, well, maps are basic tools in geography, and pretty much every book has or should have maps. And I have been teaching cartography for about 15 or so years here at UW Oshkosh. And I love making maps. You know, years ago, maps were made traditional way with ink and pen. These days, everything is done by computers. Making a map can be a time-consuming activity. In this case, some maps required maybe 2 or 3 days of work. Other maps required 3 months of preparation. I like to mention one map on page 175. It shows the spread of agricultural settlement in Wisconsin. At the first glance, it looks like it's a elevation map with green and brown colors, but in reality, we collected information on post offices in Wisconsin. There is a publication published in 1995 that shows the location and date of establishment of every post office in the state. And I use that book to locate 2,970 post offices. And using that network of points, a computer generated a map that looks pretty colorful and it's kind of a unique. So this map required probably more time than any other map. On the other hand, you mentioned soils, and there is a map showing soils in Wisconsin. This map is enormously detailed. Yet I spent less time to work on it than on the previous map. Why? Because somebody else digitized all the information and it's publicly available at the DNR, and you can download it. And if you know how to use mapping software, you can make a map like that maybe in less than a day or 2 days. So the amount of work that was devoted to prepare all the maps varied, from day or 2 to 3 months. Altogether, the book has, I think, 101 maps. So it's pretty richly illustrated. All the maps are unique. You won't find them anywhere else except two or three maps that are historical maps from Wisconsin Historical Society. And as you mentioned, the maps seem to, look nice, and that's we're pleased now with the quality of the maps after the book
Oh,
was published.
yeah, really amazing. And the thing I like about it, take a map like the tonnage of cargo, where it origin, the places where it originates from in Wisconsin. You can look at that map and know instantly
Yes.
that Superior is the place, has the is definitely the hot spot when it comes to cargo from rivers and ports.
Correct.
And that and then you see the others that are not quite as large, but I mean you instantly get a picture of what you're talking about, what John was writing about in the book. You get a great picture of what's going on in the state. This is fantastic. And John's writing is really good too. And it's your style, John, by the way, is it's a style that it's a readable style. Let's
Well,
put it
thank you.
that way. It's one that anyone can pick up and enjoy reading for sure. And it was written before the pandemic, which and you do talk about how that, and I think someplace in the book, you talk about how that might have influenced. Or how that perhaps influenced some of the work there. Talk about that for a minute.
The pandemic is only mentioned in the preface of the book. And as you say, the chapters were written before the pandemic set in. And obviously, we know that a variety of things may have been altered by the pandemic, and they were hinted at in the preface. The pandemic's not over. Wisconsin is still averaging about 6 deaths a day from the pandemic. And some of the consequences aren't going to be fully understood for some time. The biggest consequences of the pandemic will be uncertain economic activities. And as almost everybody knows, our forms of shopping, our way of shopping has changed dramatically over the last several years. There are a number of large shopping malls that we talked about that are no longer going concerns because it's the delivery services where you can go online and a day or two later, almost anything could be delivered to your door. Obviously, if we were writing the book today, there would be more discussion of the types of delivery services, the warehousing services. We hint at warehousing. In fact, we have a photograph of a warehouse being built, but warehouses are much more prominent today than they were at the time the book was written. And some of the large shopping malls aren't, as I say, aren't faring very well. We know that air service changed dramatically during the pandemic. Some airports have seen a return of service in a way very similar. We also know that there are some of the smaller commercial airports in the state for which carriers are desiring to leave and to abandon service. And while there may be other groups assigned, they're not going to be as large of planes. The frequency of service would be considerably different. I know the Chippewa Valley Airport is currently undergoing a desire by its current carrier to pull out, and they're looking for potential replacements. So those are types of changes. Certain types of recreation, outdoor recreation hasn't really changed that much. It's pretty much what things were in the past, but certain types of indoor activities may not all be back to the same. We know that there's a huge number of restaurants that have still not come back on service, and some of those that are open are open on fewer hours because of shortages of personnel. So there's a variety of changes that have occurred courtesy of the pandemic, and the full ramification of those is not yet known. Some things are going to probably move back more to the way they were pre-pandemic. Other things, as I say, in shopping,
yeah,
we're going to have a new economic geography in retailing.
And we can talk a lot more about the economic, and I want to talk a bit more about the human geography, too, but there's other aspects to talk about with our two guests today, John Cross and Casey Zaneski, who are authors of the book, The Geography of Wisconsin. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Let's see. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking with the authors today of the book, The Geography of Wisconsin, our two guests, the authors, John Cross and Casey Zaneski, both emeritus professors of, John's emeritus of geography at UW-Oshkosh, Casey, emeritus professor of geography as well at UW-Oshkosh. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org. Jeff from Superior called. He couldn't stay with us, but could you talk about the Great Divide in north-central Wisconsin?
Well, when we're talking about the term divide, we're referring to the drainage networks and which direction the water would flow. Within the northern portion of Wisconsin, the waters flow would be divided between waters that would flow to the south, either towards the Mississippi or towards the Lake Michigan area. To the north, waters would be flowing to Lake Superior. So we have a divide between waters flowing to the north, to the south. In the central portion of the state, we have a divide between waters that would be flowing eventually towards the Mississippi River. So a Wisconsin River flows into the Mississippi, whereas the Wolf and the Fox River flow into Lake Michigan and ultimately towards the Gulf of St. Lawrence. The divide between the waters flowing to the Mississippi and the waters flowing to Lake Michigan, that divide is very poorly defined. The divide in, for example, in the city of Portage is only a couple blocks from the Wisconsin River. And in periods of flood, waters from the Wisconsin River have been known to flow into the Fox River system. And the reason for the original establishment of Portage, indeed, was it was the location where the French fur traders, the voyagers, portaged between the two river systems. And it was a very easy portage. They were going through a very swampy area. If they had to carry their canoes at all, it was only about a mile, and oftentimes they could more or less half float them in the shallow waters between the two river systems. So when we're talking about divides, we have some divides that are more conspicuous, and some of them that, as I say, are poorly defined.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And, you know, just the positioning of the state itself, you do such a nice job. I love your example, your beach ball reference early in the book. But, you know, I was in London once in a pub, London, England, and I was talking to a couple, and they I said I was from Wisconsin, and they said, "Where the heck is that?" I never really heard much about Wisconsin, so I had to try and tell them the positioning, and I finally resorted to Chicago. I said, "You know where Chicago is in the United States, kind of?" And I said, "Well, we're almost straight north and right next to Lake Michigan." That's how I did it. But the state itself, as you point out in your book, the state is like halfway between the North Pole and the equator. And I remember so many times traveling through Cadott, Wisconsin, and having a big sign. They have a big sign that says, "You're now exactly between the equator and the North Pole."
Then it is also halfway between the international dateline and the prime meridian, because the 90 degrees meridian intersects with 45 degrees parallel in the center of Wisconsin, more or less.
So there we are. Karen in Oshkosh, by the way, emailed us a compliment to the authors with whom she worked with for many years, Karen in Oshkosh. She says their book is absolutely beautiful and readable, and want to thank you so much for your work on that. It is very readable book, and it's. I like it because of there's a social history that you put, there's the social aspect and the history aspect of this, which sets us up for, you know, sort of where we are today in each section, John.
Well, you know, one of the things when you are looking at any aspect of the landscape, particularly the landscape where humans have shaped it, and well, let's consider just two examples: the farmstead and an urban downtown. When you looked at the farmstead, there are going to be some structures that are fairly old. The traditional red barn that we think about, the barn that's displayed on your license plate, is showing a structure that was really built 100 years ago. And so some of the things that we see on the barn reflect the history of much earlier agricultural development. And yet, if we are looking at a modern dairy farm with a freestall dairy barn, that's something that's quite different than what the tradition was. But those freestall barns are largely been built in the last 20 years. So we see some things that are based upon the history, some things that are based upon the contemporary situation. Think about downtown Milwaukee. If you're in downtown Milwaukee, on Wisconsin Avenue, for example, you're going to see some modern finance company and bank buildings that have been built in the last decade. You will also see, within a short distance away from them, there are buildings that date back to the middle of the 1800s, and yet they're all functioning. There are along the Milwaukee and River, there are buildings that you really wouldn't understand their function without understanding why they were built. They were serving various sailing ships at a time where the warehouses were very important in that location. You'd never build a warehouse that place today. in that same location using that same style. So to understand the landscape, we really have to understand the history of settlement. And that's one reason why there's so much discussion of that in the book. To understand the current, we have to understand the past. In transportation, for example, the railroad network we have in the state, we've had a huge amount of railroad abandonment in the last several decades. However, the existing rail lines, all of those were in existence over a century ago. So we have to understand decisions that were made in the past that are going to influence the present. And of course, if you are an industrial firm or a shipping firm that needs access to a railroad today, you're going to be locating along a line whose decision about locating was made by people a long, long time ago.
This is just fascinating. And you have a nice map of that too, don't you, Casey, in the book?
Yes. There is a map showing current railroads and who owns them. And a map like that is published, I think, every year by the state. And we would love to show the old railroads that used to exist, but it was very, very hard to collect all the information on that. So unfortunately, we were unable to make a map that would show, you know, historical development of railroads.
Andrew in Madison has a question or comment. Andrew, let's go to you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks. I love your show. I'm a map addict, and I have a basement full of maps. And I just wanted to make one mention of a book that I have, which is kind of like the history of maps, and it's called MAP. And I think it's the University of London published it, Phaidon Press. It's a great book, and it has ancient maps in it. And anyone out there who's is into cartography, as your guests are, would, I think, greatly enjoy it. But I also wanted to make a general comment about how, for me, maps represent sort of the a graphical conveyance, interpretation of information, and how that has evolved over time. And especially with some of the things that we've seen in the New York Times over the last few years in terms of bubble diagrams on maps and density of, you know, pandemic outbreak and things like that. But I just wanted to pass along that that information and insight, and I'm really enjoying your show. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Andrew, thanks a lot. Casey, a comment from you?
Well, as we all know, a picture is worth a thousand words, and maps are considered pictures, so you can show sometimes much more on one map than on two or three pages of text. And we tried to, you know, make as many maps as we could, considering the limits. And I think that our book is well illustrated, perhaps a little bit above the average for typical geography books in terms of number of maps. And of course, as far as I know, this would be the first Geography of Wisconsin book that has maps in color.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And also the photos that are in there add so much to the book itself. And then the writing of what's, you know, going on in a period, and then the maps themselves is so complementary and works so well together. For sure. Tom and Cable has a comment. Let's go there. Tom, hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, guys. Your point's well taken. By the way, great book. I would love to get my hands on this book and take a look at it. It sounds fabulous. Your point's well taken about, Larry, you said people come to the state and start to work for UW, and, you know, you take them around, it'd be a good book for them, or the folks you met in London that weren't sure where Wisconsin was, you know, people like that, a book like this would be great for them. But I also think on the other side of that, there's a lot of people, I'd be willing to bet, that are residents of the state that don't know a whole lot of this stuff. And I think it would be great if more people, you know, could, I don't know, get onto that. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about that, but I mean, I like to know as much as I can about, I love Wisconsin. I like to know as much as I can about, and I'm sure there's a ton I don't know if I looked at that book, but I just thought I'd throw that out there and see if you guys had to say about that, and I'll hang up and listen. So,
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. Well, John, do you want to take a crack?
Well, I would hope that we would have the book available in the public libraries in the state. I don't know how many of them have ordered the books, but I would think that would be a wonderful way of disseminating the material to the state's residents. And obviously, folks can contact the University of Wisconsin Press, who is the publisher.
Yeah, and get some copies. Jim in Middleton has a comment. Jim, hi.
Yes, hi. The discussion earlier about historic railroads in Wisconsin, actually, I believe virtually every line that was ever built, with the possible exception of the lumber tracks that just went in for short periods to harvest lumber, can be recreated from historical information that's available from various sources. That would include, I think, the Office of the Commissioner of Railroads and the State Historical Society.
Among others. Casey, comment?
Yes, I visited that place in Madison, and I did not get too much help from them. They had some information, and there are some files that somebody digitized some of the railroads, but to my knowledge, not all the railroads are found in digital form. That could be done, and perhaps if we will ever have the second edition of the book, that might be an opportunity for me to trace these existing railroads, digitize them, and then have a map that would show, you know, historical development of all of them.
Barb called, couldn't stay with us. She's wondering where the book's available, and I pretty much everywhere, I would think. But you want to comment on that, John?
I would suggest the individuals contact their local bookstore. Obviously, I do not know statewide which bookstores stock it. The book can be ordered also from the University of Wisconsin Press.
Yeah, so there's lots of opportunities there. Dan wondered if, in an email, if you could discuss the Niagara Escarpment. Was it an event or a process or both?
The escarpment, which runs from the tip of Door Peninsula, this is within Wisconsin, the tip of Door Peninsula, and finally peters out in the area. Well, the visible portions kind of peter out in the Waukesha County area. Formed with the rock layer is slightly inclined. It is dipping downwards at a very slow level as you head towards Lake Michigan and under Lake Michigan. Now, the Niagara Escarpment actually can be traced all the way to Niagara Falls in New York and beyond. The dolomite rock unit is quite resistant. Dolomite is calcium magnesium carbonate, is quite resistant to erosion, does not erode readily. The rock unit that, for example, would have been present in the area of the Bay of Green Bay, Lake Winnebago, Horican Marsh, the rock unit that would have outcropped in that area originally is clay. Clay is extremely weak. It erodes very readily. So the escarpment marks the edge of the resistant rock unit. And yes, the escarpment does erode back very, very slowly, but its resistance to erosion leaves it as the high outcrop, the top of the bluffs. And so if you are in Oshkosh, like Casey and I are, and we look across Lake Winnebago, you can see the rise 11, 12 miles to the distance to the east, which is the crest of the escarpment. In some places, the escarpment is very conspicuous. For example, High Cliff State Park, which is not too far from Appleton, in portions of the Door Peninsula, the bluffs are very conspicuous.
Tom in McQuantico is interested in the Toledo Wars and how it shaped Wisconsin. You kind of took away the UP from Wisconsin, and if Tom's not mistaken, Chicago got taken away too from being in Wisconsin.
Initially, there was widespread expectation that the Upper Peninsula would be part of Wisconsin. And when the state of Ohio was the boundaries were fixed, that area became part of Ohio and not part of Michigan. And Wisconsin initially was part of Michigan territory. And when Michigan gained its statehood, since it had already lost the territory in the vicinity of Toledo, the legislation which established the state of Michigan gave Michigan the area of the Upper Peninsula. And the boundaries actually of the Upper Peninsula have been a matter of a fair bit of litigation because the Congressional Act did not correctly understand the location of a couple rivers. And so there's been some litigation, including some litigation that took place in the 1930s that went to the Supreme Court to establish the appropriate boundary. So anyway, the Michigan-Wisconsin boundaries is kind of a topic of considerable interest. And that's talked about in the first chapter of the book, which is the location of the state.
Yeah, it's a fascinating book. I want to thank you guys so much. By the way, Jill Nadeau says Michigan totally lucked out on that. Right after that, they found copper in the north. Oh, a wonderful book you guys have put together here. And I hope a lot of people get a chance to read it and look through it. I'm hanging on to my copy, but I'll be purchasing some others as friends join the state. And I hope you sell a lot of them. The book is The Geography of Wisconsin. It's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. You could order directly from there, I would expect, or just as John suggested, just check with your local bookstore. And if they don't have it, they can certainly get copies. John, Casey, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you very much.
It was a lot of fun. John Cross and Casey Zaneski, both emeritus professors at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. They put together a dandy book. I can tell you that for sure. Well, how many birds do you think flew through Wisconsin last night? There's an estimate of how many flew through, and it's in the hundreds of thousands. And we'll talk about that next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.